From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. It is beautiful out, and let's hope it stays that way for a while. We've had a lot of rain and a lot of cold this winter, and now it is spring, and we're moving ever closer to Holy Week and all the events of the Easter Triduum, and then the resurrection of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. So a very, very, very important time, the important time, if you will, with a capital T in the Catholic, our Catholic, great Catholic Church calendar. And this is indeed the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. And we're glad and rejoicing to welcome in Deacon Gene Smith, who is a member of the Society of St. Vincent de Paul for the last 65 years, including serving as national president from 1999 to 2005. Deacon Gene, good to hear your voice. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be with you. Thank you.
Thanks so much for joining us. You're currently a deacon and a member of the St. Raphael Conference in San Rafael.
That is correct. I'm a deacon in the Archdiocese of San Francisco and in the Council of, or the Marin parishes are part of the Archdiocese of San Francisco. And you're right, I am with at the parish of St. Raphael's.
Yeah, so it's St. Raphael, but we call it San Rafael. That's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, I know. Well, when the Franciscans started the first mission here,
right?
It was named San Rafael.
Right.
And then I think the city founders came up with a version of St. Raphael and call it San Rafael. So
right.
I don't know the reason why all of that, but it is what it is.
Well, I'll tell you, when... I think when God created Marin County and then he rested, the beautiful hills there and the coast, it's just gorgeous in Marin County.
It is. It sure is. I used to live in Daly City, which is south of San Francisco,
right,
along the coast. And Daly City, with an area called the Westlake area,
right,
is the foggiest place in the world.
You know, it's really interesting you say that. My aunt and uncle, my mom's sister, they lived in Daly City. We lived in Davis. And, Thanksgiving, they'd come up to our house. Christmas, we'd go down to their house and visit all our cousins and everything. And they were in the newer division of Westlake. And
They were on
Dorchester Drive. And,
oh, my goodness gracious.
And
I know it well.
Yeah, and I remember it well, 5 Dorchester Drive, and I don't ever remember going there. Probably went there 50 times in my childhood, and it was always foggy.
Foggy, that's right.
It could be July.
There were summers when I never saw the sun, yeah. Anyway, one day I convinced my wife to move to San Rafael, and it's been a blessing. It's a great parish, and it was there that I was asked by the pastor to consider being a deacon. So I'm blessed in a very special way to have moved here, yeah.
And so you've been a deacon for 18 years?
I have, exactly, yeah.
Wow, so...
Going on in June, it'll be 19, yes. Right.
Oh, wow. And the diaconate, some people realize and some people don't, you are ordained as a deacon, and there's a long preparation for that.
That's right. It was 5 years for us. We had a great class, but we went every Saturday morning at 9 o'clock until 3, except during the summer months. But all the rest of the time, every Saturday morning, to study.
Now, was that in Marin County or in San Francisco?
No, that was in the Archdiocese of San Francisco at the seminary, at St. Joseph's Seminary,
okay,
down in... Oh, it's in the Menlo Park area.
Okay. Not St. Patrick's.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I said St. Joseph. Used to be St. That was St. Patrick's.
Right.
That's correct.
Right.
Forgive
right. Yeah.
me.
Yeah, that's Menlo Park. That's quite a ride from Marin County.
Oh, it sure was, yes. But it was great.
Especially if there's a Giants game or a Raiders game or a 49ers game. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, well, that's really... What has the diaconate meant to you?
the diaconess changed my life. I used to go to church on a regular basis with my family. I never missed Mass, and I lived a decent Christian life. And even when I was a member of the society in those days, too, younger days, but the diaconate forced me to reflect on the gospel regularly because of homilies. Mm-hmm. You can't give a homily if you don't get steeped in the gospels. So there was a blessing to me to be just to encourage me, obviously, to read the gospels. And so, and to believe what I read, and then to practice it, and then to give it away to others. So, I wouldn't trade that. It to me, it's there's two things in my life. Well, actually, three. I guess my marriage is number one. Then the diaconate has been a great blessing in terms of I believe my ticket to heaven. And the third is the St. Vincent de Paul Society, serving Jesus. In those people that are poor all around us.
That's wonderful. That's really, you know, I'm a writer as well. I write for a newspaper, but I can imagine if I had to write a homily and then deliver the homily, well, you would really have to get into the Gospels, wouldn't you?
Absolutely. Yeah. You can't preach without being steeped in the Gospels. So that's been the blessing. I thank the priest that encouraged me to become a deacon. I thank him every time I see him, yeah.
There isn't some artificial intelligence called Gospels or our homilies or us or anything you could subscribe to?
Not that I'm aware of. I'm up in years, so I'm not into all the latest artificial intelligence. But I don't know of anything other than getting into it, concentrating on it, reflecting on it, and then giving it away. That's what I've been doing now for the last 18 years. So,
looking at my grades in college, I could use a little artificial intelligence.
Very good.
Yeah. Well, that's true. Was it difficult to write a homily and then to deliver it? I mean, there's a big difference between writing and then speaking in front of a large group.
Yeah. Well, for me, I've been blessed in so many ways. When I got involved with St. Vincent de Paul, gradually I was asked to take on more responsibility, and that included speaking before groups. And so I became much more comfortable. And then in my work life, too, I did a lot of public speaking, fundraising and stuff like that. So that part was relatively okay with me. But to really grasp the notion of a grain of something so important that you wanted to share that, and then to build a story around it to give it away. That's what it's not easy. You have to really work on it.
Yeah. So they never gave you the hook, right?
Not yet. I'll bet there's many in the pews that would say that would be happy to hear you say that, but not they haven't given me the hook yet. A lot of people will give me a bad time after Mass, and they'll say, "Well, you talked a wee bit too long today," or something to that effect, you know. So, but I try. We had a homiletic professor that encouraged us to focus on 3-minute homilies.
Oh, wow.
And that's been my task. And so, obviously, if you go to 4 or 5, that's not too much overboard. But he focused on the 3 so that we wouldn't do 8 or 9 minutes, you know. So he was a blessing, too.
Yeah, I know sometimes I've emceed events, and maybe there's 5 or 6 or 7 speakers I'm going to introduce, and the organizers have said, well, they're only going to speak for 3 minutes. And I said, oh, no, yeah. No. Nobody can – you can't even introduce somebody in 3 minutes. You know, that's really, really tough. What was your – what is or was your profession?
Well, I started out as a social worker. I have a master's in social work, and I went to work after the city and county of San Francisco, and then I was hired by the Daughters of Charity to be the director of social service for their hospital in Daly City, Seton Medical Center.
Very good.
So that was I was a social work administrator. Oh no, I went there as a social worker, and then they promoted me to being the director of the social service department. And then later, I was they asked me to do fundraising for them to raise money here in the States to develop clinics and water wells and all kinds of needed entities in developing countries where their Daughters of Charity were working throughout Africa and Latin America and Southeast Asia. So I became a fundraiser after being a social worker. I started out as a plain old good old social worker, serving people and doing the best I could, you know.
And you went to the University of San Francisco.
I did. I went to USF, and then I got a master's degree from San Francisco State. It's right next to Westlake, so it was
sure
an easy commute, and the price was right for me as well. So that all worked out,
Were you,
and then later I got an MBA from State as well, but that's all history now, yeah.
Were you at USF when the great Bill Russell was playing there?
Oh, not quite. He was a little bit before me, but I was a kid, and I got to see him play like when I was 9 or 10 years old. So it was a joy to see him play. Russell and
Casey
Jones. That's right. Got it. Yeah, I remember those guys.
I remember all of them too.
It was good.
Remarkable to see how good they were, and what you know, what gentlemen they all were. It was a different sport then. It wasn't all in your face and I'm better than you are. It was just, you know, they were true sportsmen. Very good. Well, I should tell people that Deacon Jin Smith is going to be the keynote speaker at the 18th annual Benefit for the Poor, the dinner held annually for the Society of St. Vincent de Paul, Friday, April 26th at the Doubletree at Arden. It is always a great event. I wouldn't miss it. It's a wonderful dinner, a wonderful program. It's very pulls at your heart, and it also is a lot of fun. So, and you have a chance even to win a trip to Hawaii. I don't know if the keynote speaker can buy a raffle ticket or not.
Very good.
Deacon, tell us about how you got involved. You've been a member of the society for 65 years. You must have started in kindergarten.
Well, I think actually it's 55. If it's written there as 65, I think that's a typo. It's more like 55, but it's still a long, good long time.
It's a good long time.
Involved was a good friend of mine that was a social worker in the same organization where I was with the city and county of San Francisco. One day he said to me, you know, you should consider joining the St. Vincent de Paul Society. And I said, well, what is the St. Vincent de Paul? All I knew about the St. Vincent de Paul Society was that they had thrift stores.
Right.
And I didn't want anything to do with a thrift store. But he convinced me to go to a conference meeting, which is the smallest gathering,
in a parish group.
Members of the society meet, and it's called a conference. And so I was hooked after I went to the first meeting. We prayed together. We reflected on the Gospels. And then we talked about the needs of people that have been referred to us. And so I was able to do that, and to do it twice a month or even more, we would have these meetings. And it was like a great friendship that formed amongst us, and we served the Lord in that way. So it was great. That's how I got involved. Mm-hmm. Gradually, I became the president of the conference, elected by the members, and then the presidents of each conference serve on the local council.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was a member of the Council of San Mateo at that time.
Okay.
And that made me, as a president, I had to go to national meetings in St. Louis and other places. And then the next thing you know, I was on different committees and so on and so forth. And then I was asked to be the national vice president. And then after that, I'm rambling on, but that's the history. After that, they asked me to be president, and so I was elected, and I served 6 years as national president. So that's the history.
Should we play Hail to the Chief when you're introduced at the dinner?
No, that's all behind us, and now I am a diehard member of the St. Vincent de Paul Society in my conference at St. Raphael Church. We have a great conference, men and women, multicultural. We pray together, we reflect on the Gospels, and we serve the people in our community. And even though it's San Rafael, we got plenty of people here, especially the immigrant community, that we serve, and we do the very best we can for them and with them.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's interesting. We have places in California where people think of San Rafael area being one, and Palm Springs, and all these places.
You're absolutely right.
They're always the people that are in need.
Yeah, in Marin, we have many people in need, yes.
Yeah.
But we're blessed because we have good Catholic Christians that live the gospel, and we all do our part to try and help. So.
What are the biggest challenges you as a society have in Marin?
Well, lately it's been raising more and more money because we have more and more need.
Mm-hmm.
The members of our parish have supported us big time for years and years and years. They're so generous. And the pastors we've had here have been adamantly in favor and supportive. And so that's all been good. But all of a sudden, because of COVID, we really got ourselves into a bind financially. We were just getting by. So it's a challenge to keep the monies flowing in. And we're able to do it, but we don't. Like right now, I would say we might have somewhere about $15,000 in our resources, whereas in the past we'd have $50,000, and we use that wisely and well. But it's a bit of a challenge now because of there's so many people in need.
Did you have to shut down entirely, stop seeing people during COVID?
Well, we did, we did stop seeing people. You know, St. Vincent de Paul, traditionally, we make home visits. We go in twos to visit the people that we serve. And because of COVID, we were not able to go to their homes and visit them in their homes. So we did telephone home visits, we call it. And on occasion, we would go and keep a distance. But generally, we did telephone home visits, and that got us through. But now we're back to making regular home visits. My wife and I make home visits regularly, and so that's what we've been doing. Yeah.
So describe the kinds of things St. Vincent de Paul is able to do for people. Maybe a lot of listeners aren't quite sure what kind of help you do provide. And like you say, I think it's just a beautiful model that you go out in twos, and you not only do you go out in twos, you go to their homes.
Absolutely. Well, the main request we're getting lately is help with rent assistance. Many of the families we visit are two and three families living in an apartment together in an area of San Rafael called the Canal area.
Mm-hmm.
Many of those families are two and three families, and some of them are working, some can't find work regularly. So they all need help with rent assistance. So we might, generally, we're able to give a family $500 toward rent, or if it's a single person that comes to us because they need help in getting tickets for bus or to a job or gas money or something like that, we can give a couple hundred. But generally, lately, we've been given about $500 per family to help with rent assistance. And then what happens is we make the visit, then we come back to our conference meeting and we share with the group what it is the family needs. We clarify everything, and then we vote together. Okay, let's help this family with $500, or sometimes more. It all depends on the situation, and it's all flexible based on the specific need.
Wow.
So that's just kind of an overview. But it's and the money that we get primarily, like I said before, comes from parishioners. So it's a challenge because oftentimes some people will say, well, if people are given to St. Vincent de Paul, they're not given to their parish. But, you know, as a fundraiser, I know so well that people give to more than one cause, more than one activity or need. People will give wherever they see the need. And we do our very best to be visible in our parish community. So not to boast or brag about what we do, but we want people to know that we're there and what we do. And we have about now we have, I think, about 18 active members. And we have some what we call associate members that pray in at home for us or make telephone calls for us, but they don't make home visits. So anyway, I'm rambling on here. So
I wanted to hear all about that. Tell us a little bit about when you were president of the society. What did that involve other than going to St. Louis?
When I became president of the society in the United States, one of the things that we were lacking, I believe, or at least falling down a bit on was our spirituality. From the very beginning, the conference has been focused on men and women coming together to pray together, to reflect on the Gospels together, and to serve. Well, somehow, before then, we started kind of cutting corners, and we got away from our spirituality, and we got away from the whole idea of focusing on the Gospels. And so my challenge and my hope was, and my focus was on trying to bring back what we call Vincentian spirituality. And that is basically to see Jesus Christ in everyone and to serve him well, and never to cut back on our prayer and on our reflection of the Gospel. So we put together an effort throughout the country to focus on this spirituality. We came up with new booklets and new manuals and all kinds of things, and we had meetings and all focused all around the country. And I believe, and I didn't do this myself, all I did was kind of lead the effort, but we had great people working throughout the country, and I believe now that our spirituality focus is number one, and serving is number two, but important, but not overshadowing the spirituality. So,
very good.
Anyway,
well, that is just so good to hear. And everybody up here in Sacramento we're looking forward to you coming here next month, April the 26th at the DoubleTree at Arden. People, if you want to buy a ticket, go to, and all the proceeds of this go to all the great works of the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Go to svdp-sacramento.org, or you can call Denise O'Brien at 279-345-2362. And if you want to buy a ticket, you can to the Hawaiian raffle. They will be selling tickets at the event. Or maybe you find a Vincentian after Mass, and they will have some tickets as well.
That is so good of you. Well, you know, the theme this year that they've selected is seeing God's blessing.
Yes.
I can't think of a better theme for this meeting. So I'm going to preach, or maybe not preach, but I'm going to talk about seeing God's blessings in the work that they do and in the work that all of the supporters do. And how important that is. So that my focus is going to be like on the treasure in the field or the pearl of great price. It's the poor. It's the people that are poor that we're able to serve and seeing God's blessings in them, because in that we're able to lift ourselves up and live our faith. So I'm going to do something along those lines. But I love their theme, seeing God's blessings.
Well, Deacon, I'm sure you are just going to do a bang-up job. Everybody's looking forward to that, and we certainly appreciate you taking the time to be with us today, and we'll look forward to our paths crossing about a month from now. Thanks so much, and God bless.
Well, you're very welcome. Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks so much. That's Deacon Gene Smith, who is the former president of the St. Vincent de Paul Society, the national president from 1999 to 2005. He's been a member of the society for 55 years, and he will be the keynote speaker at the annual benefit for the poor Friday, April 26th, starting at 5:30 p.m. at the DoubleTree at Arden. My good friend Walt Gray will be the master of ceremonies and also there are other awards that will be presented. The Clegg family will get the SVDP Benefactor Award. And, of course, you'll get to meet Joe Elves, the president of the Sacramento Council of the Society of St. Vincent de Paul. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour.
This is James McCormick, President and CEO of the Sacramento Choral Society and Orchestra. You're listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
Welcome back, everyone. Appreciate you all being with us here on the Bishop's Hour, and we appreciate Deacon Danny Patterson has joined us, the coordinator of the Respect Life Ministry here at the Diocese of Sacramento. Deacon, always good to see you.
Nice to be here again, Bob. Thank you for having me.
It's nice to see you in person across the across the table or in our massive studio.
It's gigantic.
Gigantic. I joke that I think this is the only room in the building that does not have a window. Out to the outside.
Out to the outside.
Yeah, it does have windows.
Yeah, yeah. But
all I can do is see Gabe.
It's like your little hermitage.
Yes, it is. It is. I can come in here and and meditate. Yes, indeed. Well, good to see you as always. Tell us, just give us an overview of the Gabriel Project, which has come under the auspices of the diocese in recent times.
So what I can tell you, I would begin with this sort of disclaimer first, is that I'm still learning, right?
Yeah.
But it's really a project, parish-based, right? Right now we're operating about 30 different parishes in the diocese. We reach into some of the northern Oakland sort of area. So we work down there as well with some of the community, the Gabriel projects in that part of the Oakland Diocese.
Oh, really? Oh, wow.
So, you know, we get a lot of calls from down there, and so we've nurtured those relationships with those parishes down there.
Oh, that's very interesting.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty interesting. So it's really, you know, sort of that full-throttled approach to life that we've mm-hmm. had a few conversations about, right? It's really one of accompaniment, and I think that's a really important word when we, you know, for instance, the 40 Days for Life campaign, I guess it's the spring campaign, right?
Lent campaign.
I think they call it spring. Is sort of coming to a close, but the women that we encounter there on the sidewalk, we have to have a place if we, I don't want to say turn them, but if we engage them and they decide to save the life of that child, then mm-hmm. we have to have a place that we can refer to them to.
Right.
Again,
right.
Parish-based. that full-throttled idea of accompaniment. And so the Gabriel Project represents that sort of leg, if I could, of the stool of our Respect Life ministry. It's really one of sort of meeting them where they are.
Right.
Right? With perhaps there's some emotional trauma there. There may be some fear there. They may be alone at this time. They may have financial challenges. They may have housing.
Mm-hmm.
They may need friends,
yeah.
Right? And so really that's what the Gabriel Project sort of is, right? Sort of that piece of accompaniment, walking with these women who are facing this decision.
Yeah,
right?
You know, that's an important word, as you say, and it's something that there's really been an emphasis in the last couple of years is that word accompaniment, walking with mothers, our mothers to be. That accompaniment also has a sense of equality, like I'm not reaching down to help you, or I'm not, you know, your benefactor or something. We're going to walk this walk together, mm-hmm. as equals, you know, and yeah, we're here to help for sure. Like as a friend. And I've heard from so many people, whether it's the Gabriel Project or the Life Center, and it all works together. Bishop Gallegos Home, Mother Teresa Home up in Placerville, or just ordinary people helping people, is that just knowing that somebody cares is such a huge step.
Yeah. Yeah, I had the pleasure. I was invited to attend Gabriel Project, a Respect Life ministry meeting at a parish recently. And they operate the Gabriel Project there in their parish. And, you know, one of the things that they do is, for instance, and I think we've had this conversation before, if you've had children, a pack of diapers can last a few days, right?
Yeah.
And they're not cheap.
The 40-pack.
Right, yeah, that's yeah. Right. And they're not cheap. So, I mean, that's a simple thing, right? But by providing the mom, and I know the Life Center is very good at this, but one of the things I sort of challenge them to think about is if a woman is already in need and she's out here at your parish in that community, so often we say, oh, go to the Life Center. Well, we haven't begun to assess, first of all, their capability to actually get there, right? And so there's this tendency to say, well, they do that. We do all this collecting and we give it all over there, so go over there.
Right.
But to really, I think, begin to rethink that, right? If we're the touch point, and the parishes are,
yep.
Then what's the capacity that we have to accompany them where we meet them,
right?
Right,
and right.
Then it really becomes that opportunity to bring them into the life of the parish, and so that the parish community can then embrace them, right? The one thing about the RCIA program, I know this is sort of a tangent, but it's always a great sign to me, especially as we begin to approach the Easter,
sure,
right?
And the Easter and ritual.
Their full initiation into the church. It's this beautiful sign of God at work in the lives of these adults, right?
Yep,
and so if you ever think that God is dead, we'll just explain that dynamic, right?
Right.
You can't. He's alive and well, and he's still calling his people. And so there's that visual impact. And I think if we invite these young moms or middle-aged moms, whatever their age might be, to come in and be a part of our community, mm-hmm. they're really embraced. And that sense of belonging then becomes a part of that journey with them, right? I in the early years of the pandemic, I guess that's kind of become a term now.
It is. Right? We just had the fourth anniversary.
Right.
March the 13th.
Pre-COVID, post-pandemic.
Yeah.
I was with a group of a couple of my brother deacons, and we were reading, you know, Pope Francis and some of his exhortations, and we read Pope Benedict's first encyclical, God is Love.
Oh, yeah.
And it's beautiful, as they all are, right? They all have their own particular thing
for a man that reaches, right? He was a raging intellectual, but he could write for the common man.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
Yeah. It really talks about, in that encyclical, and this is what really struck me about that, is we shouldn't really say, oh, I understand, right? I understand. But really, accompaniment is walking with them, alongside them.
Right.
Right? Really being a part of their and sharing in their life,
right,
with empathy and compassion, and that was a long time ago, right? But that message is still really from the very beginning. If we look at the example of Christ, empathy and compassion and a walking with,
right?
And so, the Gabriel Project. For me, is that we want to be able to be responsive to the needs of these women. We want to be then, you know, we've talked about all the different ministries in the parish,
right?
That we collaborate with them. You know that term that we use so often. We collaborate and we network with those other ministries in our parish who have resources for things,
right?
Pro-life activities, and bring them into the fold so that we can collectively, as a we, being the church as that touch point, can accompany and begin to meet not only her physical, material needs, but also the spiritual.
Sure.
Right? If we look at Christ, he almost always forgave sins first.
Sure.
Right? He healed the heart.
Right.
And then the physical. And I think if we use that example, it's a beautiful example for us. And if I could say, I want to shape these, I don't think that's my responsibility, but I want to help those leaders in the parish really sort of take another look at what it is that you're doing individually and collectively. How is the rest of the parish involved? And then to grow that capacity, right? If we're in 30 parishes, and we have a flock note system here, you know, communication platform, right? And so I just put an email out to like 500 people who are on that distribution list, getting them to think about, you know, this kind of ministry, right? Yeah. And if they don't have one, to give me a call so that we can partner them with other models that are working really well. And again, build that capacity and spread that message and that ability to serve these women that come to us and need help, right? We should be able to respond in a very positive way, whether or not we are an affluent parish,
mm-hmm.
or whether we, you know, live in the neighborhoods where socioeconomic circumstances are what they are. We still should be able to leverage the goodness of the Christian people.
Yep.
Monsignor O'Connor said one time, never underestimate the charity of the Christian people. And I remember that because I think it's a beautiful sentiment. You know, if we really think about the things that we have, they were given to us not to be hoarded, but to be shared.
Right.
Right. Love your neighbor as yourself. Right. The second greatest commandment. And so the Gabriel Project for me, Bob, sort of represents a really good image of what that looks like in our community.
Yeah, and you're right about so many different resources mm-hmm. out there. I know that the Sacramento Life Center gives mothers 2 years for free diapers, and I remember you know there's always critics of Life Center and what all these bad stories about what goes on in there and that are just not true. They're just there to help people, but
that's right.
But people on I don't know how you could be on the other side of the Life Center, and we don't get into politics here, but life's it's like how could you be on the other side of a soup kitchen or anything that's helping people, but people are on the other side of it, and really they'll write letters to the editor and all these things. Yeah. And I've said to Marie Leatherby, the executive director there, I said, I challenge anybody to tell me what is wrong with giving somebody 2 years worth of free diapers. Yeah, tell me why that's wrong. There's no strings attached. There's never a charge. There's never, it's interesting when I had never been into a Toys R Us, and I don't think they're even still in business anymore. There used to be one out on Harden.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Those gigantic.
Yeah, they were huge. And then we had a baby, and somebody said the best place to get diapers by the bundle was Toys R Us. And I'm going, you've got to be kidding me. That was the two best places, the best place to get two things, the diapers and the Enfamil or they had it in the big cans. And it was way cheaper than any of the grocery stores. They always had a lot of it, and they always had the diapers in just, the 60-pack. And way cheaper. We'd drive from Davis into Sacramento just to go to, but you couldn't leave the kids in the car. They were too little, okay?
Yeah.
And so
you had to go buy something.
So you
right?
had to buy something in addition to the they got you. But it kind of always amused me that we were going to Toys R Us to get diapers and formula.
No, I mean, if you think about it, it makes sense, right? And if I could use that analogy, they're selling diapers because people with kids are going into the store to buy toys for those children.
Right.
The church should be, we should be like that.
Yeah.
Right. I was having a thought about, you mentioned the Life Center and people who sort of be on the other side of that. I have this little analogy that, this little cliche that I use. There's no prisoners in heaven.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Everybody that's there wants to be.
Right.
And I think we could say that about the Life Center.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. They don't go out onto the sidewalks and strong arm anybody.
Nope.
They
or
go in
false promises or anything else. Yep.
They go in seeking help,
yep.
And they give them information and the kind of assistant that they need. The information first to help them make that decision. Right. Informed. And the second one is when they decide to have that child, they're there to support them. And so, Marie, I was over there and got a tour of their new location, and it's incredible. And they're having that diaper giveaway.
Yeah, right.
Truckloads full. And I always think to myself, are those all collected at the, are they all collected at the parishes and then mm-hmm. brought there? So, again, kind of going back to what I was saying a little bit earlier, they do a great job. But if it's parish-based,
yep.
And then the question was, well, I'm sure like your office here, right? There's never enough storage.
That's right. That's right.
And it's the same at the parishes, right? And I don't know, I'm kind of, those modular steel container home things, right?
Yep.
The ADUs, additional dwelling units.
Right, right.
Those things look really cool to me, right?
Yeah.
And they're not expensive. You can get a small sea cargo container for not too much money
mm-hmm.
and place it on your property.
Right.
The parish that I was at had lots of property sort of unused.
Right.
And I thought to myself, fill that thing up.
Right.
You know, buy one, you know, $2,500, $3,000, and fill it up with diapers and right. formula. And now you can begin to really not have to send them somewhere else.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
They're here. You know, maybe they invite them to mass, then you go out in the parking lot and you get some diapers and some formula, you know,
yeah.
maybe some baby clothes.
Yeah.
So I think really thinking about how we want to provide the kind of services that, you know, I think we need to re-envision. And so part of the work that I'm going to be doing over these next several months, you know, now that the procession is over, you know, I was involved in a lot of that,
right.
that Eucharistic procession. That was beautiful. We had a lot of other pro-life events. And so my task over the next several months is going to be to go into the parishes where these Respect Life teams are, where these Gabriel projects are, and really try to get a sense of what's working.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as the diocese, I mentioned to you before, we don't have anybody knocking on our doors really looking for the kind of help that you do at a parish, right?
Right.
And so looking how those things are, how they're working well, how I, as the coordinator at the diocesan level, can provide, you know, help. Connect them to, you know, that peer-to-peer stuff.
Right.
Connect them to people that are doing really good jobs of running the Gabriel Project. What kind of outreach do they do? How are they communicating and gaining support in the parish? What kinds of things are they leveraging, you know, from the other ministries? How are they involved in supporting and then we can begin to build capacity,
mm-hmm.
right? I was talking to a woman the other day who was involved, and she said, you know, because I asked, well, how can I help? You know, I hate that question, right? We're the state, you know, we're here to help. You know, we're the diocese,
right.
you know, we're here to help. But I asked with sincerity, you know, how can I, from where I'm sitting, help? We would really like some help in how to accompany, how to have these kinds of difficult conversations, because they can be, especially if you're
sure.
a stranger, right?
Sure.
How do we have those kinds of conversations? What things should we be looking for in the conversations or in body language
right.
or so that we can get not only you know, an assessment in writing of where this woman is, but also some emotional,
mm-hmm.
Where they are emotionally, so that, again, if that's something that they need, we want to be able to make that connection for them.
Right.
You know, if I know when my kids were born or when my wife got pregnant, you know, you run through 1,000 things in your head.
Oh, you
right?
do.
How first one is, how am I going to pay for this?
Right.
Right. And, you know, God provides.
Yeah.
He really does. And so if in my circumstances, I've been privileged to be able to, you know, do that, right, and never without sacrifice, but be able to provide for the children that God blessed us with.
Right, right.
And so we need to be able to help these women in that aspect too. So to see where it's working, to understand how it's working and why it's working, and then where we are not yet present in parishes, we want to try to help them bring mm-hmm. that ministry there, because the need exists everywhere.
So how do people find you? It's one of the questions I asked Marie Leatherby when she's on. You know, I say my big worry, and I know there's a lot of outreach, and my big worry is those people that are falling through the cracks for whatever reason. You know, they don't know about the Life Center, they don't know about the Gabriel Project. How do you reach these people?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's a great question. You know, and that was one of the questions that I asked when I went to that parish meeting. How are you promoting this in your parish? But that assumes that everybody who needs this help is in the pews, right? And I've got to be honest, I'm driving down the highway. I don't see any, you know, big billboards or, you know, going through the park. You know, you see real estate agents doing those park bench promotions.
Right,
you know,
right.
I think we need to rethink how we do it. You know, the great question with social media is, mm-hmm. you know, you spend a lot of time and energy and resources putting that thing together, putting messaging out there. But who's it reaching?
Who's it reaching? And you don't know.
Right. Who's it reaching? You can see how the number of clicks that sure. you get on, where sure. they come from, mm-hmm. where they go to when they leave you. How do you drive that traffic? Mm-hmm. And, you know, just looking at some of the flyers and some of the material that we have, that's one of the things that we're working on is getting these little business cards into the places mm-hmm. where people go.
Yep.
You know, that might be county offices.
Sure.
You know, it might be in, local community clinics where people go for health care or dental care or family wellness, whatever it is that they might need. So where people go, we need to promote the project. And I think that's one of the things that we need to think about.
You know what my wife says? When somebody says, we've got 10 coupons for free pizzas or something, and we don't want to use them, we want to give them away. Yeah. Just go to a laundromat.
Yeah. You know, when I go to a coffee shop, I always go to their bulletin boards.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? It's interesting. You have lost dogs, you have whatever, you know, kitty cats for sale or whatever. I never see one of these.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a place where people go.
It is. And they look.
Mm-hmm. And so that's a great suggestion. And I think we have a gathering coming up here a little bit later in the year, the Gabriel Project 2024, or not 2024,
yeah.
2024 gathering Saturday, May the 18th at St. Dominic's Parish in Benicia.
Very good.
So we're inviting everybody who's interested in establishing a program and building a ministry in their parish, and everybody who is part of a parish that has this ministry. We're going to look at some best practices,
mm-hmm.
Have a little bit of conversation around mental health,
mm-hmm.
Which is a big topic.
Right.
And again, try to build that network among these people who work in the parish and create that net, if I could use that, and make them fishers of women.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You're going to change the good book a little bit.
Well, just expand on it. Right?
Yeah, not change, expand. That's right.
Yeah.
Add to.
Yeah. You know, it's... I don't know. I was thinking of the analogy of the net, and I saw Jesus and the fishermen, and I thought, well, we're fishing for women, right? In this instance, go back to I'm going to use that fishing analogy. Make sure we're putting the right kind of bait on the hook, and we're using it for a lure, whatever it might be. But find a way to reach the women who need this help and then really walk with them.
Very well said. Deacon, always a pleasure to see you. Thanks for all you do. God bless you and your family, and we'll hope our paths cross again soon.
Have a beautiful rest of Lent and a beautiful Resurrection Sunday.
Thanks so much, Deacon.
Right. God bless.
Hey, God bless you too. That's going to do it for us for today. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you again soon. God bless. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the Mercy Foundation, enriching lives in the Sacramento region through Sisters of Mercy ministries in healthcare, education, housing, and the care for the poor and elderly. For the Mercy Foundation, philanthropy is one of the most powerful expressions of compassion and love. Just as many people in our community need a hand, Countless others are reaching out to them with comfort and hope. You can express your care and concern for the less fortunate with a gift to the Mercy Foundation. You can give them a call, 916-851-2700. That's 916-851-2700. And you can be confident that fully 100% of your contribution will support the Sisters of Ministry of Mercy Ministry or ministries that you choose. And what a wonderful treasure Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts has been for all of us here in the diocese as they transition into new ownership and management. They continue to offer wonderful workshops, wonderful resources for the Catholic community throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Not only does Easter's provide a wide array of Catholic books, both current releases and longtime classics, but they also sponsor a number of valuable workshops and lectures throughout the year. They're located at 6916 Sunrise Boulevard in Citrus Heights. Give them a call, 916-338-7272. We also receive a generous underwriting support by Crumley & Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of America, Ameriprise Financial Services. If you have questions about retirement, Crumley & Associates can help you with their confident retirement approach that can help define a clear roadmap to get you where you want to go. You can contact them, get all the details at Crumley & Associates, 7956 California Avenue in Fair Oaks. They're at 916-638-4600. That's 916-638-4600. And we are certainly appreciative of the fine and longstanding support of the Mercy Foundation, of Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts, and of Crumley and Associates.
Held high, such small sacrifice. If not joined with my life, I sing in vain tonight. May the words I